Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you get a cancer diagnosis, your world stops. But not Fox Chase Cancer Center. When the science moves quickly, we move quicker. Because cancer is all we do. From the molecular level to the human level, we stay focused on your unique cancer. Not just following the science, but discovering new paths forward. Giving you a head start on better outcomes. Learn more at foxchase.org/where you start. Because where you start matters.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Your official station to talk Jets. The Fan, 101.9 FM and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
All right, little thunder. 102. McMonagle here with you. Started the show having a baseball conversation. Yankees have a hole. It's time to go fill it. I'm tired of this crap. Heard Aaron Boone on the show today. We'll get into some of the stuff he talked about. I mean, most of it I knew. DJ LeMahieu was the starting third baseman. As of today, that's the hole I'm talking about. We got to go out and fill it. And the owner needs to be willing to spend a little bit of money. No one's expecting to be the Dodgers. Go spend some money. Don't wait for Marcus Stroman to get moved before you fix this third base hole. Because we've seen when players come in spring training, even if you do it then, people have been hampered by this. You want this to be solved in the next 2 weeks. And if they're having trouble moving Marcus Stroman, then you just got to do it. Talk about Jason Dominguez possibly leading off and playing center field, playing left field. I don't know how I feel about either of those decisions that the manager talked about today. So plenty to talk about. We'll get into Pete Alonso as well, but I want to get back to the calls. 888-808-1019. Pedro in the Bronx. What's up, Pedro?
Hi, bro. Good night.
Hello. How are you, man?
Hi. A little cold, but good.
Yeah, a little cold. You're out there in the cold right now? Stay warm, man.
Yeah, listen, I'm a Yankee fan. I am 100% Dominican.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy because Soto went to the Mets for that money. For me, and I tell you again, I'm Dominican. For me, is overrated. He don't worry.
Really?
He don't worry that money.
Really?
Yeah, really, really. Yeah, from the bottom of my heart.
Okay, I'm surprised you feel that way. But listen, is he? I mean, Pedro, let's be fair, right? Is he worth $765 million? No. I mean, I don't know if any player is worth that specifically, but it's what he got on the market, and he's an incredible player. It's as a Yankee fan, I'm still getting over the idea that he's not going to be in the lineup come opening day. But
let me say something.
Sure.
The Mets.
Yes.
The Mets, they're going to regret that contract more early than later.
Okay.
Trust me.
Listen, I hope you're right. So we'll see. I hope you're right. I hope it ends up being something that costs the Mets.
I don't call to talk about Soto. I want to ask a question for you.
Yes.
I listen everything about the guys one signing Bregman and the trade for Arenado. But the question is, for do a trade for Arenado, you need move Chisholm to second, right?
Move Jazz to second, yes.
Exactly. It's no better for the Yankees, from my point of view.
Yeah.
Leave Chisholm in there and trade for Arise. I feel we need a table player, a table batter like Arise, a guaranteed 300 hitter in the top of the Yankees lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've been torn on this. I think he's a little. You mentioned Juan Soto being overrated. I think Luis Arraez is a little overrated as a player. I mean, he hits for average and he gets on base, right? So he would be a great fit for the Yankees in the lineup.
Three batting titles, and you say he's overrated?
Yes, I do. I think batting average is overrated. Yes, he's won three batting titles. How come nobody wants him and he's going to be on? They're looking to move him and he's going to be on his third team in 3 years.
It's a hit machine. It's 200.
He's also a horrendous defensive player. Horrendous. He's going to hurt their defense. If you thought Gleyber Torres was bad defensively, he's far, far worse. Gleyber is prone to the big mistake at the wrong time and making errors. Like, but he still had tools. He has some range. He has an arm. Luis Arraez has no tools to play the position. He's just an awful, slow. You know, typically when you have the hit tool, when it's all you do, like all he does is hit singles, right? And I'm not knocking it. He does it better than any player in Major League Baseball. He is a hit machine, as you put it, 100%. But typically, if you're going to be a hit machine with no pop whatsoever and just be a singles hitter, it typically comes with good defense and some athleticism. He has none of that. All he does is get on base. And granted,
remember, he doesn't strike out either. He's only 20, 25, 30 strikeouts a year.
Mm-hmm. No, he puts the ball in play. I agree that he has the hit tool is a huge factor. He's won three batting titles. He strikes out. Yeah, he struck out 29 times last year. He puts the ball in play at 314. His on base percentage was 346. So it's not a lot of walks. I mean, he has an on base percentage 30 points higher than his batting average. But the problem is he really doesn't do anything else. He's awful defensively. He doesn't bring really athleticism. He gets on base. Don't get me wrong. Putting him leadoff in front of Judge and in front of Bellinger and the rest of the lineup would be huge. He helps the lineup immensely. And if they traded for him tomorrow, I would be pumped, Pedro. I would be pumped about we found our leadoff hitter. It's going to help the lineup immensely. But I do think that it comes with some issues and it makes them a far worse defensive team. Now, granted, he's 27. He's going to be 28 years old next year. I don't know what they'd have to give up to get him necessarily. And then, you know, what he's going to want in free agency. If you told me you'd rather have him than Arenado, I'm not going to really scream at you. I think that's a reasonable take. Definitely reasonable. I mean, the guy's won three batting titles in a row, so he's a great hitter. And he would help that lineup immensely, more than Nolan Arenado would. But Nolan Arenado brings defense and at least a little bit of pop. They have, like right now, they lost Juan Soto's 40 home runs. Where are they getting them from? Like, Bellinger's going to hit 20 to 25. He's not really maybe at Yankee Stadium now. Thank you for the call, Pedro. Maybe at Yankee Stadium he hits a couple more than he did at Wrigley last year, even though if the wind's blowing in the right way, you can get easy home runs in Wrigley. But, okay, so maybe his home runs come up a little bit. Paul Goldschmidt, I don't know if right now he's a huge home run hitter. Like, they need a little bit more. They need some pop, and they would use an on-base guy like Luis Arraez. Don't get me wrong. I would be pumped. If that breaks on this show tonight, I'm playing dance music. We're having a party. All right. Don't get me wrong. I want someone to fill that hole better. That's leaving Jazz at third base, though. Again, Jazz at third, Luis Arraez at second is not a good defensive infield. It's not. I think Jazz is okay at third. He's athletic enough to make the occasional just, oh my God, what an incredible play. But he's learning the position. He's got the arm strength for it. He's got the reaction time for it. He's got everything for it, but it takes some time. He might be very good next year, but I'd be a little concerned. And just overall, the defensive infield is not good. It's not that good if Luis Arraez is on there. In fact, it's a bad defensive infield. Where if you get Nolan Arenado, you have a great defensive infield. So I don't know. And I'm not saying defensive infield is the only thing that matters. Luis Arraez is a batting champion, gets on base at a 360 clip answers the question of who the leadoff hitter is for this team, doesn't strike out, puts the ball in play 100%. He would help this lineup immensely, probably more than Nolan Arenado. But overall, I just don't know if it impacts the team as much. I do think he's overrated. I'm sorry, I do. Why doesn't anybody want him? I mean, you're going to tell me, oh, you know, Minnesota saw value and they traded him to Miami, and Miami can't keep a player because they're not going to, you know, they look to trade guys right away. And now, you know, San Diego, you know, their owner died and they're looking to cut payroll. Okay. That's all true. But why wouldn't Minnesota want a batting title champion? And you want to talk about, you know, declining the last, you know, last year he declined off of the year before. He had 354 down to 314. He had an OPS plus of 128 to 106. Now, that's still an above-average player, but think about that. This guy's a batting title winner. He's a 106 OPS plus. 106, that's 6% above average. He's a batting title winner. The guy is a batting champion, and he's 6% better than the average Major League Baseball player. At least that's what that one stat will tell you. But he doesn't strike out, and he gets on base. John in Maspeth. What's up, John?
How's it going, C-Mac?
Good. How are you, buddy?
You know, I'm hearing about third base and this big hole, and, you know, I'm not sure if you said his name earlier in the show. Just tuned in a little bit ago. But I've been saying his name all offseason. Call the Colorado Rockies, see the price on Ryan McMahon, and just pay it. This guy fills all the boxes. He's a great defender. He's mm-hmm. a lefty bat. Well, he's a veteran.
They're okay on lefty bats at the moment. You know, it's not. I'm not saying I don't want him because he's a lefty bat. I'm just saying there was a time where it was like, oh my God, you need a lefty. I don't think the Yankees are there right now. But
that was back when we got Rizzo and Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, like right now they're okay, lefty righty.
Yeah, but still, he's a very solid player. He's right in his prime. He's got a good contract. The Rockies aren't going anywhere. They're not spending money. Just give him up, you know? Rockies just got to do good by him.
It takes two to tango, and everything we've heard is they don't want to sell him. Everything they said, everything I've heard is they're not going to trade him. Well, I can't. They got to keep some good players. I don't know. They want to keep him. There's talks they're going to pay him. Now, would I want him? Sure. I mean, you know, it's not like he's an unbelievable player, to be totally honest with you. Like last year, he hit 242, had a 722 OPS, and he had a 95 OPS plus. He is yet to have a 100 OPS plus. I know that's a one stat, but he is literally the definition of an average Major League Baseball player the last 3 years. Brilliant defensively, but, I mean, the first year he played over 150 games was 2021, right? He hit 23 home runs, drove in 86, hit 254, 779 OPS. 20 home runs, 60. The next year, 20 home runs, 67 RBIs. Played in 153 games, 741 OPS, hit 246. 2023, hit 240, 2370, OPS of 753. And last year, 20 home runs, 65 RBIs, played 153 games. So he's played 151, 153, 152, 153, 240, 397 slug. And a 722 OPS, and that's with his home games being in Colorado. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I'm just saying he's not a great player. He's not a great player. He's a solid player, and he's great defensively. And maybe he can flourish once he gets out of the dregs of the Major League Baseball and starts winning or whatever, but his home games are in Colorado, and his career high is 24 home runs. And his batting average, he's a 240 hitter. Reese in Manalapan. What's up, Reese?
Hey, Chris.
Hey,
you know
Reese,
me. So normally I talk about the Rangers, but this time I want to talk about the Yankees.
Sure.
So, listen, as a Yankees fan, hard, impossible not to love the offseason they've had so far. Beefing up the starting rotation, beefing up the bullpen. I get all that, but doesn't this offseason feel incomplete without adding another bat? I mean, not for nothing.
It is.
We haven't had a legitimate third baseman since Alex Rodriguez. Like, think back to when Alex left retired with the Yankees. What is the last notable third baseman you can legitimately remember with the Yankees? As far as I see it, it's one season of a great Miguel Andujar.
Yeah, and there was a couple of years of Gio Urshela. But yeah, I mean, I guess they haven't. And trying to think, no, not really. I mean, they haven't had anywhere to the level of like he's the guy for the next however many years. No, they had a great year from Andujar. They had a couple of really good years from Gio Urshela. Jazz was really good for the second half of last year for them. But no, they haven't had a staple at third base. No.
And listen.
But it doesn't. It doesn't mean you can't build a team that way. I mean, the Dodgers really haven't had a staple at shortstop for how long? I mean, they've been trying.
So that's where I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
I said so in this offseason,
right?
Yankees have beefed up. They've necessarily haven't prioritized like maybe the lineup because I mean. You know, you lose Soto. Everyone's concerned about the lack of offense. How you're going to replace that? And you remedy that by you sign Max Fried. You beef up the starting rotation. You get Caleb Williams in the trade. You beef up the bullpen. So it's like if you're going to go a different route on how to win games, that's fine. However, I just feel like there's something about this team and the way it's structured as. Maybe as we see it, how it's going to become opening day, this offseason to me just still feels incomplete. And it has nothing to do with what the Dodgers have done in the offseason.
Agreed.
Because the Dodgers realistically, because the Dodgers don't matter to us. We only have to worry about the Dodgers until we get to the World Series, and that's if we make the World Series.
Or if they make it. There's no guarantee they make it. They lost to the Diamondbacks last year.
I was there in 2022. I was there in game 4 in San Diego. I was stationed in the Marines when they lost to the Padres in game 4. I happened to be stationed near there. I went to the game, and they got eliminated by the Padres. Baseball playoffs are wacky. Anything can happen.
No, of course. And thank you for the call, Reese, and thank you for your service. I appreciate it. I agree. I don't think this has anything to do with the Dodgers. I think the Mets need to worry about the Dodgers. I don't think the Yankees should worry about the Dodgers. People get upset by that. Well, man, the team you have to beat the World Series. Did you see the World Series last year? I don't think you can worry about the Dodgers. You can't worry about a National League team. You got to worry about your division, then you worry about the American League. You get to the World Series, you have to play well enough to beat a team. There's no guarantee you're going to face them. There's no guarantee you're going to face them in the World Series. But I agree with you. That's why I started my open of the show, is that the Yankees are incomplete. And the owner's trying to tell you how upset he is, and yet he's leaving this team incomplete. They are one move away from having a complete offseason. And it doesn't have to be a slam dunk. They don't have to give Alex Bregman $160 million. I would like them to. I guess I would be, if that news broke today too, I'd be pumped. There's a lot of different things that could happen that I would be pumped. If the Yankees did to fill that third base hole. But, like, yeah, I think it's slightly incomplete. But I don't think the Yankees are, you know, like, they're good enough to go win. Like, I still think they're good enough to go win the World Series right now. I mean, this hole, they're going to try and fill it at either DJ LeMahieu or Oswaldo Cabrera is going to take the job. Or Oswald Peraza is either going to take the job and be better than we hoped, or they're going to try and trade at the deadline to get somebody. Like, I still think they're good enough, because I think they're good enough to get to the World Series. And I'm sorry. I know it's, you know, they got embarrassed. In many ways, they got embarrassed. It was also a very tight series. The Dodgers scored one more run than they did. I mean, it wasn't like, I know it was a gentleman's sweep, as people call it. If the Yankees didn't blow it themselves. They were forcing a game six. Like that series, what the game one is a walk-off home run. Game three is tight. Yankees won game four. Game five was obviously tight. It was a close series. I'm not saying the Yankees were better than the Dodgers. Not even saying the Yankees were as good as the Dodgers. But the Yankees were good enough to win the series, and they could be good enough to win the series this year, even as presently constituted. But go out there and finish this off and act like the New York Yankees who got spurned by everyone from Juan Soto to Roki Sasaki. Like, go do it and fill this spot and don't wait for Marcus Stroman. That's all I'm saying. That's what's bothering me. 888-808-1019. We'll get into a little Pete Alonso next as we're hearing from John Heyman. And that's, you know, I don't want to upset John. John, if you're listening, I mean this with all respect. We love you. But we kind of have an idea where that information's coming from. Why now? Why is the owner who told you at Amazing Day that he doesn't like the negotiations and he doesn't like the structures they've been given, and maybe that'll change, but if they don't, they've already got an expensive roster and they need to sign other players, and every day that goes by, less and less likely to sign Pete Alonso. That's what he told you. And now tonight, back into the...
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Kickstart your new year with a rewarding career at the HK Group. HK is the leader in heavy construction and contractor site materials with over 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. HK offers a wide range of opportunities, including heavy equipment operators, CDL drivers, mechanics, site supervisors, engineers, and project managers. 100% paid benefits designed to promote healthy living, financial stability, and career growth. The HK Group does not discriminate. Apply today at hkgroup.com. It's your future opportunity.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Frey, why?
Your official station to talk Giants. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Did you do it? Did you guys do it? Maybe you did it. I can't help but wonder, as we got this news to yesterday, the report from John Heyman, that Steve Cohen is back into the fray and that the Mets and Pete Alonso are once again, after really being dormant for a while, as far as negotiation talks go, that the Mets and Pete Alonso are talking once again. So I'm still on the point that I still believe, and it doesn't really matter because no matter what happens now, I still won't think I'm wrong. I don't think David Stearns wants him. Plain and simple, right? That's what I've been saying forever. I don't think David Stearns wants him at really any of the prices we're talking about, unless Pete really tucks his tail between his legs and comes back to the Mets and all, and is willing to take whatever the Mets offer. Now, there's reports that it's going to be tough that you know, the feeling is Pete is not going to get anywhere near the same type of offers from other teams that he has already gotten from the Mets, even though he's disappointed with it. And obviously we heard at FanFest how frustrated Steve Cohen is with the structure of the deal presented by Scott Boras and Pete Alonso. And I got to tell you, I started to feel a little bit differently about Pete going back to the Mets, because I've been on the record saying he's not going to go back to the Mets. I felt a little differently after hearing Steve Cohen speak on it. Because although I still firmly believe that David Stearns wants no part of it, I do think the owner does. And I do think as long as the owner convinces David Stearns that whatever fair contract, because I don't think he'll push David Stearns to do something that David Stearns is 100% dead set against. Like, they're not going to negotiate against themselves. We'll see what these negotiations bring. But if Pete Alonso comes to his senses, as many fans would want to tell you he should, and tells Boras, listen, forget this, man. Let's sign with the Mets. Whatever the deal is, let's just take it. I think the owner would convince David Stearns to do it and say, hey, look, it's worth it to us. We need him in the middle of the lineup. We do want to win this year. And I promise you, whatever we want to do next, you know, David's that, you know, whether you want to go out and get Vladimir Guerrero Jr., whether you want to go get Tucker, whoever we want to go get, you know, a couple of years of Pete with a possibility of an opt-out is not going to prevent us from doing such. And that's where I started to think maybe there is a venue for Pete to come back, because you could tell Steve Cohen was invested. Not just aware of the situation. Not just, hey, yeah, you know what? What David Stearns tells me is it seems like a really contentious negotiations, and we don't like, you know, I don't like, and I feel strongly about it. Those were his words at Amazing Day when he tried to tell you that negotiations are over. I mean, that's how I took it. I took it as, hey, we've been trying this. The structures are terrible for us and completely one-sided, and unless things change, we're going to move on from Pete. And a day later, 2 days later, back into negotiations, I think there's a chance this owner, who loves giving you what you want, loves giving you the statues you want, loves giving you the uniforms you want, loves giving you the retired numbers you want, old timers day that you want, I think he actually heard the fans. I have to admit, I think he understood that most fans wanted Pete. I think he went to that Amazing Day and had it overrun in some ways by negativity about the Pete Alonso situation. And I'm not saying it was a cloud around the whole day. You know, there were interviews with players and former players, and it seemed like a great time. But at least his Q&A and what happened there, it was overrun by negativity about not bringing back Pete Alonso. I think this owner is reacting to whether it be the limited amount of fans or whatever the case may be at that Amazing Day, I think he's reacting to the fans and willing to go back and negotiate. Now, I still don't think he'll take a structure of a deal he doesn't believe in. I'm not saying he's going to cave in that aspect, because if it is the structure that Evan reported, where it's like a reverse opt-out, a reverse buyout, where if he opts out, you have to pay him more, if he feels dead set against that, I don't think he's going to change that negotiation or be willing to give up that part of the contract, because Pete has no real argument on it. Right? His market's collapsed. I don't think anyone else is willing to do that structure. And I don't think Steve Cohen has to go against his core belief of that structure is inherently unfair. So I don't think Steve Cohen's going to get back into this negotiation and be willing to cave on some hard set rules he believes and structures he believes in. But I think he might be willing to give a little bit now if he's going to go back into these negotiations. And we'll see. Now, again, it's coming from John Heyman, who, without being on the take, no one is suggesting John Heyman is doing anything wrong. He just has a very good source inside Scott Boras's inner circle, or Scott Boras himself. And typically, we have been led to believe, and it seems like, John Heyman gets a lot of sources from the agent, which is perfectly normal, perfectly fine. Some guys have better ins with the Mets or the teams, and some guys have better ins with the agents. It's perfectly normal. I'm laying it on thick. But typically, Heyman has been known to get his information from the Boras side of things. So if Boras wants it out there that Steve Cohen is back into the negotiation, How does that benefit Scott Boras? Like, I'm curious about that. Like, why? Just to say, oh, the Mets are back in. I to drum up something from the Blue Jays. To drum up something from another team that's, you know, oh, the Mets are out. Because typically you want to involve other teams to get the team you're talking to in reinvested, reengaged. Acknowledging that the Mets are reengaged, I don't know how it benefits him going back to the Mets. So I don't know how to read this, and maybe I'm looking too much into it, but that's what we've had to do this entire time with Pete Alonso. It's all been the wackiest negotiation with a million different stories, and no one knows what to believe or what's real, and I'm just trying to play this game and go, well, why is this now breaking from John Heyman, who typically gets his information, or typically, you know, you feel like Scott Boras is the guy he's been getting his stuff from. So if that's the case, why is Scott Boras leaking the Mets are back in negotiations? How does that benefit going back to the Mets? The Mets know they're reengaged in negotiations. To rile up the fan base for more last-second cries of, get it done this time! Get it done this time! That's what I think. I think everybody saw. Steve Cohen saw. Pete Alonso saw. Scott Boras saw. There is an outcry from this fan base to get this done. And I think both sides... One, the Mets recognized it a little bit. And two, Scott Boras is going to try to use it and put it out there that, oh, the Mets have reengaged, so that Met fans call me up or Met fans call up the afternoon show and say, look, if you're willing to deal with them, let's just get this thing done. And I do believe Steve Cohen wants him on a level I wasn't sure of. I still don't think David Stearns wants him. And again, if you want him, you get it done. Like, they're willing to do it for the right deal. Pretty much, I think, to appease the fan base more than even how much they believe it helps them win or helps build the roster they want. I think the boos, and again, I don't think the boos were directed directly at Steve Cohen or directly at David Stearns, but just the boos on the situation for a player who has hit a lot of home runs from them and played well for them. We're talking about, you know, 20-something million dollars a year. It's not like it's going to be in the low 20s. And I think that just for a couple of million dollars, it's starting to make more sense to Steve Cohen. So hopefully this last thing is promising, because I do want Pete Alonso back with the Mets. I do. And I think that makes them a far better team this year. And this year is important. So we'll see what happens from this point on. But I was surprised how invested Steve Cohen sounded at Amazing Day and how annoyed he sounded. And you only get annoyed if you care. So I thought he would be indifferent to Pete and let David Stearns do it. And I think David Stearns wants no part of it, but the owner seems more invested than I thought. And now if the Mets are reengaging, I think we've gotten to the point where it's Boras and it's Cohen. And if they get to that point and you know, Pete wants to be a Met and tell Scott, look, get off the stuff that you know they're not going to do. What's the point? Let's work on getting me as much money as possible and forget these structures. Let's just, you know, maybe if I drop the structure, give me another $2 million a year. Something along those lines. Something where both sides would be willing to give, because it makes too much sense for both sides to not come together. Because it won't prevent them from doing anything. So we'll see if this is a last-ditch effort, because Steve Cohen told you, unless things change, we're moving on. And now a day later, they're back into negotiations. 888-808-1019. Let's get to John in Brooklyn. What's up, John?
Hey, what's up, T-Mac? Thank you for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. What's up?
Yeah, I'm just glad. Good show today. I'm glad that you're hitting on this topic, yes, about Pete Alonso, because yesterday I called, and I didn't call when you was on, but I called when earlier, and I spoke about this situation, and I said that I don't think that the owner and the GM liked it, the boos that they heard. And I had told Keith and the other guy that if they don't sign Pete Alonso, those boos will continue on. And they totally disagree. But I want to know why you thought of this, because this is New York. We boo Cashman. We boo Derek Jeter. We boo everybody. This is New York. We boo if you don't perform, we let you know. If you don't sign the people we like, we let you know. Cashman comes out on Yankee days and he gets booed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know, I mean, pretty much since you hit on the topic.
Yeah.
It looks like the booze actually worked, right? The booze worked, and I don't think he liked it. And I don't think
I agree.
And he wants it.
Well, listen, I don't, and thank you very much for the call, John. I don't think the boos would persist, you know. I mean, it's not like they're going to boo opening day or, you know. I think the Met fan would probably, once the season gets started, have the optimism, see Juan Soto in the uniform. Like, I don't know. And again, once Pete's not there, it's hard. What are they going to boo? What are they going to yell about? They'll call the shows. They'll call WFAN and complain, I suppose. But I think it was just more of like, that was supposed to be a complete celebration. And maybe the owner thought that it would come up, certainly. And that maybe the fans would show, you know, maybe you'd get a Pete chant or something. I don't know. But it was supposed to be an amazing day. And when boos started coming out, maybe the owner was a little ajar. Like, hey, man, this whole thing ruined the whole day for me. Like, I felt like I had to answer these questions under, you know, the fans booing and everything. Like, I just think maybe it started a re-engagement on him going, all right, look, let's figure this out. We're not going to do this thing that you want us to do. We're not going to do this structure, and you don't have a market. So let's re-engage here. I don't think it's suddenly going to transform how Steve Cohen and David Stearns feel about this negotiation. I don't think they're going to suddenly be willing to do this structure that they're uncomfortable with. I think that's a no-go. I think there are certain things that are no-goes still. But I do think the reaction at Amazing Day and the reaction and noise around it and the perception, even if it's not entirely true, the perception that the fans were booing them even after signing Juan Soto, I think maybe it did bring the owner back to the table a little bit. And I do also think you don't know exactly what's going on, because this is kind of, if you're doing your due diligence, it feels like it's coming from Boris, considering where it's coming from. And maybe Boris is just trying to gain traction off of the booze. And maybe maybe he just called the Mets and had a quick conversation, and then suddenly it's, well, the Mets and I are negotiating again. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I know this has been a very contentious negotiation, and I do have a feeling the Mets are sticking to their value. And it sounded like they weren't going to have any more talks unless Pete came back to them with, okay, I'll get off of this. But maybe they're willing to at least talk it through now and be more engaging because of the boos. But I don't think the boos are going to change a dynamic shift in their thought process on Pete Alonso. Maybe it spurned them to have one more round of talks and really give Pete another chance before they start to really move on. Like, hey, Pete, you know we're not doing this. You know we're not doing that. This is what we're comfortable. Let's work it out now, because once, like, this last round of negotiations ends, we're moving on. And I felt like maybe they were already at that point where, Pete, we told you, goodbye. You call us before we do anything else. Maybe we could talk, but we're done. And maybe the boos gave them one more opportunity to go back and say, look, can we get this done? Because we understand the fans want it. So I don't know. It's interesting to me. This whole thing has been a crazy negotiation. But I do think that maybe the owner is willing to bump up the money a little bit to get it done. I don't know. We'll see how it goes, because no one likes negotiating against themselves. But at the same time, he's not as valuable to anybody else as he is to the Mets. Right? The Mets get the player without losing draft picks. The Mets get the player who've done it in his uniform, and the fan base literally boos at their celebrations because he's not here. Like, he's more valuable. They need that bat in the middle of the lineup. He is more valuable to the Mets. We always talk about Pete. Understand, the Mets are more, it's more valuable to be in the same uniform. It's more valuable to be a Met. It does work the other way. There is no picks to his name. Other teams have to lose picks to sign him. It's more valuable to the Mets than it is to anybody else. So the idea that it's bidding against themselves on some avenue, it is, but it's also more valuable to them than anybody else. Matt in Long Island, what's up, Matt?
Hey, Chris, thank you for taking my call.
Listen,
just want to dive into Pete Alonso. I think, I agree. It's like, he said it's exhausting, seriously. This guy's been here for 6 years. I get it. Maybe he's pushing it a little, being a little Brady, but, like, I mean, and you look at this team and you don't have Pete Alonso, like, it's January, like, 25th or something now, I'm sorry. But, like,
it's January 29th now.
For a long, long time, and, like, no one really values him. You're right. Like, someone would have signed him by now, overpay him, but, and when you look at the Mets all around, like, the team is like, what do I think about this team? I mean, I don't want to rush conclusion, but the pitching's not really good. It kind of sucks, I'm being honest. Starting rotation, bullpen's good.
It could be good, it could be bad. Like, right now, it's a coin flip, and you know, I'm nervous about the rotation. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, if you look at the Phillies and Braves, I mean, like...
Oh, clearly better, yeah.
Completely better, even the Marlins. But listen, you look at Pete Alonso, like, you're looking at Spencer Torkelson. What are you getting out of him? He got sent down to the minors this year. I mean, he's 4 years younger. I don't think he's getting much production. And it's like,
no, you're taking a flyer on a failed top prospect.
Can I just get one more thought on what you think about this?
Yeah.
Juan Soto not showing up to me. Listen, it's not the biggest deal, but, like, you just got paid $800 million. Like, you didn't have flight trouble. Just admit, like, you couldn't make it. And I feel like, I think that's the kind of player, it's like, I'm not saying he's a bad guy, but, like, that's why you didn't get a suite. And really, it's like, it just showed you, like, I mean, all right, stuff happened, but, like, Lindor was there. I think Pete Alonso was in there. It's just, like, not the greatest look. I mean, like, come on. Like, this franchise just invested in you $800 million. I mean, like, you could have at least, I don't know, sent a video or something. It's just, you know, I feel like, I don't know. It's just, I don't really like that.
Yeah, look. I mean, I hear you, and thank you for the call. I don't know if he had flight problems or not. I believe everyone else who was in the Dominican Republic at the time also couldn't make it because of flight issues. I've seen all kind of crazy things on Twitter talking about there's a website you can look at, and there were no flights grounded. I mean, if you can imagine someone actually checking that, it's insane. I have no idea. It would have been nice if he was there. He was at, like, there, the Mets Academy, graduating young players in the Dominican. Like, I don't think there's any doubt. You know, he's going to go show up and play well. That's all that matters. I hear what you're saying. And maybe the next time they have it, he'll be there. He'll be there on opening day. And he'll be there for you this year, hitting 280 to 300, hitting 35 to 40 home runs, driving in 90 to 110 RBIs, having an on-base percentage of, you know, 370 to 400. And he's going to be, you know, having unbelievable at-bats and making you really happy that he's in a Met uniform and no one's going to remember Amazing Day. I promise you. So don't get hung up on it. Would it be nice to have had him been there? Sure. But it's not the end of the world. And I don't know if he had flight problems or not. I'm going to choose to believe people. I'm not that cynical. And nor do I really care to check flight plans and or other things. Or like this video of him in a dugout for one of those Dominican games. And they're saying, you know, that's proof he wasn't even trying to. I have no idea. Who cares? He wasn't there. It's unfortunate. He'll be there on opening day. And he will give the Mets everything he has. He will play hard. He will try to win. He will be great. That's easy with Juan Soto. Right? That's just who Juan Soto is. Doesn't matter the ballpark. It doesn't matter the team. It doesn't matter the pressure. It doesn't matter the expectations. It doesn't matter the manager. It doesn't even matter the team around him. On some level, I suppose that does a little bit. But he's going to be great. He's going to be a great player. He's going to be a great player for a long time. Maybe not all 15 years, but he's going to be a great player for 8-9 for sure. Probably more than that. So I'm not worried about him not making Amazing Day. I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't bother me. And wouldn't bother me if I was a Met fan either. But the Pete Alonso stuff, they need him. Like, I'm sorry, they need him. They need him in the middle of this lineup. They need something in the middle of this lineup because you're right, I don't know about the pitching. They might have to score a hell of a lot of runs. You're counting on Clay Holmes and Frankie Montas to be legitimate starters, not ace starters, not two starters, but, you know, you're going to want 100-plus innings, 130 innings out of both those guys, quality innings. Like, that's a tough ask. David Peterson, again, to recreate the one good four-month period of his entire Met career. Manaea to continue pitching the way he did in the second half last year, which he hasn't pitched anywhere near like that for 3 years. Sanga to stay healthy. A bullpen with, you know, Loudmouth Minter and Diaz, who's got to bounce back, who was, you know, effective and was better than effective, but not nearly what he was 2 years ago. Like, the bullpen scares me, the rotation scares me, and the lineup is just okay. Even with Juan Soto. And again, you're going to count on Lindor. Like, this is the thing Met fans need to understand, right? Even the Met fans want to get on me. Oh, we said you said the same thing last year, right? The Mets were punting on the season last year. You said it. Last year was special. It wasn't special because it's normal. It was special because it's unique. They were 11 games under 500 and something snapped and clicked. And they came together as a group and everything went right for 4 months. The idea that that's just going to happen again, the idea, you know, Lindor was a very frustrating, you know, always good, but on the verge of becoming the next, you know, Beltran, who again was very good, but the fans felt fickle about. His OPS wasn't nearly good enough, wasn't good in the big moments. You know, when the season was fading, where was Lindor to be? Nowhere to be found. Like, those were conversations had up until May of last year. He's been a Met a hell of a lot longer than that. So now he needs to be an MVP candidate again. Vientos needs to build on last year and have another year just like it. You know, you got to guess right with Siri the way you did so many other pieces. Winker has to come here and be the same player he was the second half. Like, last year was magical. You can't just roll it back in some ways or make the same kind of decisions on Flyers starting pitchers just because last year Severino was good and last year Manaea became an ace. Like, you can't just bank on that. Now, hopefully, obviously, Senga's going to be healthier, and that would help the rotation. They didn't have that at all last year. But at the same time, like, to just assume everything's going to go the same way, that's... I wish the Mets had done more. I wish the Mets have done more. And Pete Alonso is the easiest thing they can to bolster the middle of that rotation. Let's go to Dylan in Long Island real quick. What's up, Dale? Dylan?
Hey, C-Mac. Big fan of the show, my man.
Oh, thanks, brother. How are you? You got it.
I'm doing good, brother. Just wanted to talk to you about, you guys were talking Yanks before. The Yankees need a third baseman, C-Mac. I know we've talked about it. You guys all talked about it on the station. But why not Luis Rengifo? I know he only played 80 games last year, but hit 300. Good defense over there at third base.
Not really, but he's really not very good defensively at third base. He's okay, but he's not really good. He is a solid player. He's definitely a name. He was a name on the trade market last year before getting hurt. He's somebody who's definitely out there now. He is 27 years old. Last year, hit 300, 763 OPS. The year before, 783 OPS.
Yep.
Like, he's definitely a solid option. Again, you put him on the list of guys where if the news broke right now, the Yankees made a trade for Luis Rengifo, I will be a happy guy. Like, I agree. He's a good, solid ball player and somebody the Yankees have targeted, a name that's been bandied about with the Yankees and some of the pundits, and certainly, thank you for the call, certainly by a lot of the Yankee Twitter. Rengifo is a name that I talked about last year at the deadline. He's a career 253 hitter, but the last, you know, 264, 300. He had 300 last year. He only played 78 games. He hasn't played more than 127 in his career. he's going to be 28 years old. Not much power to speak of, but he's a 300 hitter. He's an average, maybe slightly below average from what, and I don't know. You know, you look at the stats all you want from hearing people talk about him. He's a slightly below average defensive third baseman, but, you know, the last 3 years, 101, 724, 783, 763 OPS. I mean, I feel a hell of a lot better about that than what DJ LeMahieu, I think, is going to give them. So, and he's got some athleticism. He, you know, stole 24 bases last year. 24 bases in 78 games. So, I mean, you're talking about a 30 base stealer. More than that, you're talking about a 40 base stealer. That would definitely be something I would totally be interested in. That's one of the names you could definitely get behind. John in Staten Island. What's up, John?
Hey, Chris. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good, pal. I tell you, the last time I spoke to you was shortly after
we found out that Pete was willing to take a 3-year deal.
Yes.
So I'm shocked that some team didn't jump out. I know the first base market has changed and the power righty hitter that hits 30.
Yeah.
But I am surprised. But
well, listen, but we still don't know, to be fair, as far as I know. All we've heard is that, you know, he was close with the Blue Jays. We haven't had any parameters. When he gave the Mets that 3-year deal, we heard that it was exclusive to the Mets. So in fairness, right. I don't know if he's offered 3-year deals to any other team. And you also got to remember, people got to give up picks to sign him. So now if you get a 3-year deal with an opt out possibility,
that's true.
Suddenly now I'm signing Pete Alonso, giving up picks, and he might opt out in a year. Like that's why it always makes more sense for the Mets.
Right. I mean, Andy Martino reported that that he would be surprised if the Blue Jays deal beat the Mets for what that's worth.
Right.
You know. But now, as far as Stearns, whether he wants him or not, this is what I don't get. How could you not want him back on a 3-year deal? Once he went from 5 to 3, you won. How much is he going to regress in 3 years? I mean, would it shock you if next year he went back to 40 homers and had 100 ribbies?
No.
I mean, he had a horrible year with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
He batted 200. It was the first time he was really horrible. With Soto there, and I don't understand the pressure you're going to put on Vientos, who you mentioned, not to regress. Batting behind him.
No,
Right now he would bat third probably, and Soto would bat second.
I would think it would be Lindor, Soto, Vientos, yes.
Right. So I remember Soto prefers batting second, so that's probably what would happen.
I don't know if I think he preferred batting third was the...
Oh, he did.
I think that was the talk heading into last year, yes. But
Well, then maybe...
I don't know how he could not prefer... It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where he hits.
Maybe
he just had a great
Vientos
year.
Then, maybe Vientos batting second would be better, but the problem with that is after Soto, you're dead.
I agree.
He's going to walk. He might walk 200 times.
No. I hit him second. Whatever his preference. I'm just telling you what I heard his preference was. I don't care what his preference is. He's hitting second. There's no doubt.
Okay. So then it would be Vientos. The pressure on Vientos not to regress. You know, if I'm an opposing team, they're going to be scouting him. He's going to see sliders. They're going to pitch him differently. I can see some regression or a slow start. You know,
throw on top of that, he's got to play first base. So now he's playing a position he's completely unfamiliar with, or I shouldn't say completely, but I think there is some first base in his history in the minor leagues. But I mean, he's been a third baseman at the major league level. Now he's transitioning to first base. He's got all the pressure of hitting in front of Juan Soto. Now that helps hitting behind Juan Soto.
Yep.
I mean, Juan Soto's going to be on base a lot, so you're going to get fastballs. Like, it helps. I understand this.
Yeah.
And thank you for the call. We're up against the break here at the top. There's no doubt there's some added pressure to be the guy who has to hit behind Juan Soto, but it also makes your life easier. Let's be honest. He's going to get fastballs because Juan Soto's going to be on. He's going to have two of the best hitters in the National League, theoretically. If Lindor can be what he was last year, you're going to have Lindor and Soto hitting in front of you. You're going to have guys on base. So it helps, but it does create some pressure. And I don't like the idea of he has to follow that season, be the guy who hits behind Soto, and learn a new position. It's a lot to ask. You want him to be nice and comfortable. I think, it makes way too much sense for me to re-sign Pete. And we'll see. I think now, I guess there's starting to become a real sense that that's just eventually going to happen. It's going to be where Pete's willing to take it and how far Pete's willing to wait. But I think it's a good sign that now Steve Cohen's re-engaged after telling you he probably wasn't going to re-engage. Whether or not he's going to... And I sort of agree with you. Like, Fliegelman keeps trying to put in my ear that I'm being silly, that this structure of a contract is ridiculous and you can't do it. And I'm not saying it's not ridiculous. And I'm not saying the rest of baseball isn't going to hate it and then setting the precedent sucks. But for me, Pete Alonso, if he's willing to give you a three-year deal, it's not the craziest thing to just do whatever it takes to get him at a 3-year deal. Again, especially if it's like, I don't know how the money would work. It's very complicated. But if you have to pay him after he opts out, what payroll does the money go on? If it goes on this upcoming season, I could understand not wanting to pay for a player who's not going to be here. If it's on last year's team, why would Steve Cohen care about last year's payroll? I mean, the Dodgers are pushing money off 60 years into the future. You're telling me you can't pay a guy for opting out? Like, that's such a miserable precedent that every other owner in baseball will hate it, and now it's, now you've set the precedent where other people are going to expect it. I get all that, but to me, I don't want to do that, and certainly at the moment, they don't have to. That's the number one thing is he's not created a market, and he's not the type of player who demands it. But would it hold up a Juan Soto deal? Would it hold up a Juan Soto deal? If Juan Soto said, look, I want an opt-out after 3 years, and if I opt out after 3 years, I want $5 million per more, I want a $15 million bonus for opting out. Because my opinion is Steve Cohen would have said, okay, I'll give you $15 million if you opt out after 5 years or so. So if it's just a matter of Pete's not good enough to deserve it, well, now it's just a matter of, now we're just parsing words and we're negotiating. Now it's not a impractical process that I won't consider. It's, well, Pete Alonso's not good enough to do it. I won't consider it for a player of Pete Alonso's ilk. But if Juan Soto wanted it, would I consider it? Because it sounded like he'd consider anything to sign Juan Soto. So, I mean, to me, once Pete came back with 3 years, it felt like, get the deal done. And the idea they haven't yet makes me think they don't want him. But we'll see. I do think the owner wants it more than I gave him credit for early on. I can admit when I'm wrong. I still don't think Stearns wants it, but I do think now, listening to the owner, and now maybe he's re-engaging, and how frustrated he was, I do think the owner wants it. He just doesn't want to overpay.